football. The Starship, Ro Ganja with Anna DeBlanca, up for another day of broadcast insolence. And it is Mr. Richard Roper in for Anna today.
Good afternoon.
And Anna's off on this Columbus Day, or as my phone told me, it's also Indigenous Peoples Day.
Whoa, okay.
I was not aware of that until my phone told me that. On the when I opened up my calendar,
yeah,
you know, at the top it gives you like a little branding statement, and
yes,
it was Columbus Day, and then in italics, Indigenous Peoples Day. Is it? Did we?
It's kind of ironic.
Yeah. Well, we got it. My phone doesn't like to choose sides.
I guess that's what it is. Yeah, equal time. Is
yeah,
the idea there.
That's what it is.
Columbus Day always sneaks up on you.
Well,
like, what's those traffic? There's a parade. I'm like, we have a parade for Columbus Day since when?
Since
44 years.
Yeah, don't step into that, my friend. Don't step in. I have made the mistake of stepping into that years and years and years ago. It's a rookie mistake.
Yeah.
Boy, what are you doing? I think like this. It's an amazingly, the people who put on the Columbus Day Parade are incredibly proud of that particular parade. And that's why it's on State Street. Right, remember they moved Columbus to Columbus for a while,
yeah,
to up there on Columbus Drive by the, you know, where they moved a bunch of parades that are, it's by the Art Institute over there, and that those parades all got lost.
Like Columbus.
They're going to be mad about that, too. They're going to be mad about that,
too. I think they should have the parade stop just like he had to do and then get a smaller parade to finally make it to shore, like get the little rowboat. Can't dock that big ship.
And he's kicking the cars off of the streets.
My point is that it's one of my favorite parades of the year for a very important reason, because it goes down State Street. All parades should go down either State or Dearborn, in my estimation.
On Saturdays.
Yeah, on Saturdays.
Although they could have had it yesterday. It would have been fun with the marathon at the same time.
hold on. Hey, Kenyan guy. Oh, I'm sorry, you're British. Ooh, whatever. Stay right there.
Just got kicked by a Jesse White tumbler halfway through. Sorry.
Did you
about
want
that.
A cannoli?
Yeah.
Anyway, the point.
Combine.
The point is that it's one of my favorite. Because a parade should go down a canyon of buildings.
When they put
it out on Columbus, you might as well. You can put it anywhere. Why don't you just put it like in a park? No one's going to go to it. You got to put it where people are and they're throwing stuff out of the windows. That's the way you do it.
Okay. Oh, the confetti and all that.
Yeah.
Do people watch the parade? I think everyone's just in the parade nowadays.
Well, it's not as busy downtown today because
it's Columbus Day.
Right. But it is a bank holiday, but not a market holiday.
The bank holiday, but not
right, a market holiday. Right, because the Dow is open today.
We're still spending
right?
money.
The New York Stock Exchange is open, but banks are closed. I'm very confused by the whole thing.
Sneaks up on you.
What was your point about that?
I woke up today. I didn't even think to myself, wow, today's Columbus Day. Until I got downtown and realized there was a parade. I said, what's this parade for? I go, oh, it's Columbus Day.
I want to say something here before we get started. Let me just give you a couple things about what's coming up. Michael Steele's going to join us in just a few minutes. Also, Dan Herbert, who is the lawyer for Jason Van Dyke, will be joining us in studio coming up here in about 20 minutes. But before I do that, I want to say that the Chicago Blackhawks last night were so incredibly gracious to our folks and our listeners and all the people who came out with us last night. We took about 60 people to a super suite last night at the United Center. And it was they put on a show, boy. The Blackhawks now, the new-look Blackhawks,
wow,
a lot of offense.
Yeah.
Sometimes the defense is not always what it needs to be, and the goaltending not exactly 100% what I'm looking for here. But I will say this. It was exciting. There was a lot of the lighting of the lamp, as they say.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of dancing. We were doing a lot of Chelsea daggering. And it was a ton of fun. And is this the first time in NHL history that a first three games have gone to overtime?
It might be.
And for a franchise?
Yeah, well, I know they were only, because the first two, that had only happened three times before, so you got to figure three, to start the season with three games going to overtime, yeah, it's probably the only time I can remember.
Yeah. But
and the captain off to a hot start.
Oh, Captain Sirius is taking this very seriously right now. Yeah. It was just so much fun last night out at the United Center, because the sellout crowd for the 5 million sellout. I think only Toronto has more consecutive sellouts now. That, and they've been selling out since 1945, so it's an unfair comparison.
They have the sports record, not just the hockey record. Yeah. Toronto of all places.
But they this is right up there, and it was just loud and mad, and man, I'm telling you, Hawks fans and Hawks players, Hawks management, man, we were talking to a bunch of them yesterday, and just amazing. Steve Cochran, who I'd never met before, but we did a show together yesterday,
which is fantastic,
and he is we had just a ton of fun.
I loved it. It's like when your two favorite shows cross, like Chicago PD and Med. And you're like,
the crossover episode. Yeah. That's what we did yesterday. It was a crossover episode.
It was great.
Yeah.
When the gang from St. Elsewhere went to the bar at Cheers.
And you're like, what's happening?
Yeah, it was fun. It was really fun. I made him do all the work, but it was great. So anyway, I want to thank the Chicago Blackhawks, our partners in crime here, and we have such a great time with them, and looking forward to an amazing season.
Big season.
Really a lot of fun.
No quitting that team.
No.
As you saw last night.
No. And it's the core, too, that's back at this, like, crazy core level of behavior. These are the guys. I'm telling you, there were guys... Blue Jays. I don't know why. On the Maple Leafs that were like looking at them going, oh, these are the guys that we,
these guys are still here?
Yeah, they're still here and they're back. They're still good. Right. Oh my God. So it was really, it was a ton of fun
last night.
Ton of fun. And they got a point. I'm going to take it as they didn't get a 2-point victory, but they got a 1-point. Victory, as far as I'm concerned, because they came back from behind, and they really, Cam Ward, God bless him, but I'm getting him new glasses. It's gonna be like Slapshot. I want him to wear the Hanson brother glasses, okay. Well, he's in goal.
Look, they got 5 points through three games without their top goalie, right? So you got to figure. Right. I mean, this is a great start for the Blackhawks so far,
without any top goalie. Let's just put it that way.
Only a few more games. He's supposed to be back. Well, the target date's the 18th, so game six.
Yeah, but I think that they're not going to be having Corey in on. I don't think he's going to be.
Not every night.
He's not going
to
be doing a.
We're going to work him way back.
A regular starter schedule for him.
Right.
So I think we've got. I think. I don't know. I checked the waiver wire. Is there a waiver wire in hockey? I checked the waiver wire.
Any luck?
I'm going to call Stan.
Put your name on it.
Yeah. Hey, check the waiver wire.
Wire, dude.
And it's like, we don't have a waiver wire.
Just check it anyways.
If Gump Worsley is available or Cesar Maniago.
Gump Worsley. This is the second time Gump Worsley's come up. He came up yesterday.
Look at that.
Yeah. And the guy's name is Gump. All right. Let's.
Why would a goalie need a mask?
All right, he was the last guy not to have a mask, right? Gump Worsley, right? In Minnesota for the North Stars. All right, and don't anybody move. Stay right here. We're going to be checking in with Michael Steele, the Man of Steel, as he calls himself now, about the week that was in Washington and what we should look forward to as we are now this is it, 4 weeks away from the midterm elections. And the president's on a roll. So we'll see what Michael Steele has to say about that. We'll see if that's because that's certainly what the White House is saying. That's what a lot of even CNN, said that the president's on a roll. How about that?
He's getting tired of winning. Remember, he told us that.
Yes,
he's so sick of winning.
Yeah, well, he is. Well, he's been doing some winning. All right, we'll get to all of that. But first, let's check in with Judy, find out what's coming up at the bottom of the hour in the newsroom.
President Trump says he's sending in the lawyers to help stem gun violence in Chicago.
We also strongly oppose efforts from politicians to shackle local police departments and prevent them from cooperating with their federal partners. So let's see whether or not Chicago, as an example, locally accepts help. They need it. We'll straighten it out fast. We're going to straighten it out fast. I assume they want to straighten it out. Sometimes I think maybe, is it possible that they don't? But we're going to be there. We're going to try and help.
Huh? Wait, he's going to do what? As the president, that was from a couple of hours ago. He was down in Florida. There was the International Association of Chiefs of Police, I think is the the organization he was speaking to, really, it's a great organization.
Sure.
And I was watching most of the speech, and it was good. I mean, he actually made, he made some salient points. He said some positive things. I agree with a lot of the things that he stands for in terms of law enforcement. But then he said, you know, we're gonna go there and fix Chicago. And I'm like, this is an interesting announcement, because does Chicago know he's coming in to fix Chicago?
Yeah, and he says, you know, easily can straighten it out, can fix it, take care of it, just like he had said a couple of years ago. He said he, you know, knew how to fix it.
Right, because he said this.
Stop and frisk works. The crime spree is a terrible blight on that city, and we'll do everything possible to get it done. I know the law enforcement people in Chicago, and I know how good they are. They could solve the problem if they were simply allowed to do their job and do their job properly, and that's what they want to do. So, Chicago, we're going to start working with you as of today.
Okay, so, and we now know that he's talking about federal law enforcement from the U.S. Attorney, from Department of Justice, U.S. Attorney's Office. Is what they're talking about, which is people have been talking about now for a couple of months here. I think they actually did add a few prosecutors to the roster here to start charging up some of the people that are being grabbed up on federal gun charges and other federal crimes, federal drug trafficking charges, things like that, to get them to put a little bit more of muscle, federal muscle behind prosecution here. One of the things that people will tell you in law enforcement is that street level criminals don't necessarily want to go into the federal system because they can get shipped around the country.
Oh.
And they don't, it's not like they're going down to Joliet to go to prison or
see their buddies down
or
there.
Somewhere that, you know, where they know the people there or their family can come visit them. This is a much more difficult circumstance. So that's kind of where this thing might be of value. So we'll find out. I mean, people talk about the National Guard. They talk about all kinds of other solutions here. Interestingly enough, the numbers are down this year in terms of, believe it or not, I know, but they are. They're down in terms of murder and they're down in terms of violent crime. Shootings are down slightly, but it's still a shockingly high number.
Yeah. Still an epidemic. Still happening in the same places. And that's why, you know, look, if whatever the president has that in mind that could help is welcome. But those, you know, those proclamations, it's going to get done, and it's going to get done fast, and it's easy to straighten out. It's not. If it were, people would have straightened it out.
Right. But he did say that, so it must be true. And he is winning, as he told the crowd today. And he's almost bored of it. Almost bored of it. Not quite yet. All right. Michael Steele, who, of course, you know as Man of Steel, is joining.
I get better and better every time.
Yeah, you think so?
For you.
Yeah,
maybe.
Exactly.
I'm next to him here.
Right. He wants to make that. Actually, you know what you should do? I'll send you that, and then you make that the ringer on your phone.
Oh, my gosh.
That's what you should do.
Done.
that's a good thing to do.
Done.
All right. Let's talk about there's so much winning at the White House. They're almost bored with it. What do you make of all of this? It was a pretty good week for the president.
No, it was a great week. It was a two-pronged approach that was, jump-started by the president's salvos towards Dr. Ford last week. That sort of coalesced, galvanized, excited, whatever word you want to use, the base of the party, certainly steeled the spines of the members of the United States Senate who, after Christine Blasey Ford's testimony, knees were weakened by the truthfulness of what she was saying, or at least the impression of truth that of what she was saying, to the point where McConnell made it very clear we're plowing forward. That was salvo number one, and salvo two was the president going after, and everybody said, "Oh, okay, got it. This is what we're supposed to do." So it was a good week for the president. But then there's now the aftermath and how women voters in particular respond to what they saw over the past couple of weeks, and certainly the the president's rhetoric over the last few days probably has not helped in sort of galvanizing women to stand with the party this fall.
Well, Michael, that's exactly right, your observation about the president. You know, we always talk about how he is, you know, the most thin-skinned human being in history and responds so poorly to criticism. But he's also a really sore winner. He's a terrible winner because he continues to gloat. He piles on electoral votes that he never had or inauguration crowd. And again, as you mentioned, that's what's happening here, because at first he said, well, you know, Dr. Ford's credibility seemed to be, you know, pretty strong, and I believed in her and believed in her. And then it's they made up this whole thing. It was a terrible hoax. The entire thing was fake. He doubles down on that, which I do think, you know, could hurt him with a certain group of voters.
Well, it could hurt him with a certain group of voters, but the calculation is that as witnessed by the closing of the enthusiasm gap, which of course is not a translation for votes. It just means that people are interested in paying attention to what's going on, and they may or may not get out the vote. So you still have to get people to the polls. But in response to the closing of that gap, which was about 10 or 15 points 3 weeks ago, now down to about 5 points, 2 to 5 points, depending on the poll between Democrats and Republicans, that was the core thing here. The question becomes, how do you sustain that? How do you then go and translate that into votes? And the betting is that particularly white male votes, which is why the president sort of created this new him too sort of meme or idea of white male victimhood to sort of stimulate the white male vote to get out and offset to the greatest extent that it can the pissed off white female vote that's out there. And then, of course, there's the calculation that most people under the age of 35 will be more interested in being at a bar on election day than actually going to a voting or polling place on election day. So, you know, again, the idea is to stimulate as much of your base vote as possible in the next 4 weeks. And I don't know if that's sustainable, because the big fight was Kavanaugh, was getting him on the bench. Now that he's there, and I think this is where you're going to see the president pivot, and he's already started to do this, to your point, is to say, you know, we got to keep the House, we got to keep the Senate, because if we don't, guess what they're going to do? They're going to impeach Kavanaugh. So that's now the new meme, although, you know, Democrats have long since moved beyond that, because for fear they don't want to create that narrative.
You know what's fascinating is the commercials for Tom Steyer have been pulled down, the guy that's been screaming about impeaching the president himself, right? And they realize that impeach is a very bad for Democrats. That's a bad idea right there. And so, you know, Americans don't want that. I mean, listen, if they find out that Putin was actually calling the shots for the president, that's a whole other situation. But, and you know, until that time comes, not that it ever will, but until that time comes, impeachment is kind of off the table here, right? So this has to be won politically. Democrats have... they've used the only weapons they have. They don't have a good core of candidates at the moment. They have terrible leadership at the DNC level. Terrible. Terrible. You used to run the RNC. I mean, I'm sure you got friends everywhere, but I gotta say, when Perez took over, I'm like, what are they doing? They don't have a face. They don't have a message. They're not singular in their approach to these things. And the Republicans have all of that. And so they're basically battling uphill here. And I do not think it's going to be the blue wave they think. They are not going to win the Senate, Democrats. And it's going to be much tighter in the House. And that should scare Democratic leaders and people of good faith who would like to see some change here too. And that is because the Republicans aren't doing it. The Republicans, as long as the president is winning and is a bully, they're going to follow him. My fear is they will follow him anywhere on any whim. And on that happy note, I'm going to have to let everybody go. All right. Thank you. Thank you. And again, you know, you have been listening to Michael Steele, who has a podcast called Man of Steel!
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that's a beautiful thing.
Yes. It's something. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. All right, Judy Butlick has got the WGN news right now. Brokaw Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, a lot going on today. Coming up a little bit later on in the program, a young man who hasn't accomplished much in his acting career, Ryan Gosling, is going to be with us. He's been in something. What was he?
Yes, he was in the La La Land, among other films, and his director in that movie, Damien Chazelle, who was the youngest director to ever win an Oscar at the age of 32, and now has directed him in the story of Neil Armstrong, First Man.
And they are going to be in the studio.
First two men.
Two men in the studio with us. Coming up, you'll hear that at 5:30 today. Okay. All right, now let's talk about let's go back to Jason Van Dyke's story from last week. And Dan Herbert is joining us in the studio. He's Jason Van Dyke's attorney. And let's, first of all, I'd like to get a sense of what your reaction was, because the cameras were trained on you and Jason Van Dyke as the jury was being read. And it seems one moment you right after it was a second degree murder, guilty of second degree murder, you touched Jason Van Dyke's knee. You went over and you kind of tapped his knee like, I'm here with you. Describe that moment to us.
Well, it's the opposite of what most people think. Once I heard second degree murder, I actually felt a sense of relief. So I had told him beforehand, I said, if we hear second-degree murder, that's not the death sentence. We know that first-degree murder is off the table. So it really was a bit of a sense of relief, because they came back pretty quick, and that always scares me, in a case like this.
That's sort of conventional wisdom, right, that if they come back quickly, they're gonna find on the side of the government?
Yeah, yeah. So I said if they come back Thursday, we're in trouble. So they sent out a question late in the morning on Friday, and that's when I realized this thing is coming to a verdict today.
Okay. What was that question? Can you say?
Yeah, it was about the 16 shots, whether the way they charged it was based upon the autopsy, and they wanted to know if they had to look at them individually or as a whole.
So I think one of the things that it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to people who are not in the legal world, but the charges of aggravated battery, the 16 counts of aggravated battery, actually each count, the single count of that, is a stiffer penalty than second-degree murder, potentially, right? It's because the parameter is different.
Yeah, true. And in the 16 counts, a lot of people made a big deal about that. For sentencing purposes, there's no difference between a conviction on one count or 16.
But it's still 6-year minimum, 30-year maximum. And on the second-degree murder, it's a 4-year minimum, 20-year maximum. And there's a possibility that, in Cook County, especially in cases like this, when it's a single act, generally there's concurrency as opposed to consecutive sentences. But
so, in other words, they're not going to be stacked up. There's just whether it was one or 16.
Correct. Yeah, in second degree, it's probationable as well.
Right, right. Oh, okay. But let's, just as a point of fact, I was thinking about this at the moment that this all came down. The 16 counts of aggravated battery are based, obviously, on the 16 shots. But if it is determined that in this particular case, the victim died, can you still batter a corpse? And is there a sentence appeal potentially on that, or could the judge pull that all back and away and say, well, those counts don't count, I'm not going to sentence on those?
But it's a good question, and I think that argument is kind of irrelevant now, based upon the fact that they convicted on the first count of aggravated battery, as well as the remaining ones. But that certainly was a strategy that we used at trial, because we felt very good that we would be able to justify the first volley of shots, and we had evidence that the first volley of shots were in fact the deadly shots. So yeah, that was going to be our argument, that the subsequent shots essentially were irrelevant, and there wasn't a lot of precedent on it. I kind of got the idea from, there was a Toronto streetcar case, I think it was Forcillo was the name of the defendant, but it was a police officer that shot two volleys of shots, ironically very similar to this case, and I think the jury found that the first volley was justified and the second volley wasn't.
Let's talk about how Jason Vadeck is doing today. And we, you know, he's obviously in county jail now, right, awaiting sentencing. And sentencing will be October 31st. Is that correct? Still scheduled for that?
Yeah, we're up. I don't believe we're going to do the sentencing on that day. My guess is we'll do it a month later. We haven't checked with the court on that. But I'm planning on filing some motions to dismiss the verdict based upon lack of evidence. So that will likely take place before we do sentencing, so I would assume that we'll do sentencing sometime in November.
And we expect he'll be in county jail until then?
There was some talk about moving him. They were fearful that county would not be a safe place, but he is still in county as we sit here today.
Dan, have you had a chance to go back and listen or study what some of the jurors who spoke with the media said about why they voted to convict and kind of analyze that and think about how the trial went out? Have you had a chance to hear some of what they had to say?
Yeah, a lot of people have sent me some clips, and it's interesting and surprising and not surprising in some manners. We attempted to get some jury instructions that would accurately define the law for the jurors, and we were denied the ability to do that on a couple of points, and it was ironic that many of the jurors, when they spoke about they thought Jason Van Dyke should have used less lethal alternatives. We had a jury instruction on that we proposed. It's an accurate statement of law saying that police officers do not have to use lesser alternatives before they use deadly force. I think that jury instruction would have been really important. Mm-hmm. We also had one from the United States.
Was that jury instruction? That jury instruction was not in your
statement. It was not given, no.
Okay.
Which is, you know, we have two really, really good bases for appeal.
Appeal would be an reversible error here, right? That I don't know if that's in the state court. I know in the federal court that's what they call it. But if you have a situation where that instruction is not given, an appeals court could take a look at that and say, okay, well, then declare a mistrial and then retry?
Well, they can throw out the conviction. They could send it back for a new trial. We certainly would be seeking that the conviction be thrown out.
Will you be handling the appeal?
Probably, yeah. It's up to my client, obviously.
I want to play something here, and I want to get your thought on this, because the closing argument, obviously, it's really important in a case like this, because, yeah, 3 weeks of testimony in state court, that's a long time, right? There's a lot of data that they had to go through. There were a lot of witnesses that the jury had to consider. And so the closing argument, you know, critical to kind of wrap up everything. And one of the jurors said this, because, you know, race in this city is always an overtone to things, as opposed to an undertone. And the question was asked of one of the jurors, you know, did race ever come into this?
I don't feel that it did until the end. The statement that was made at the end was wrong to me. The Boy Scout statement. I just didn't feel that was appropriate.
Okay, so that's a reference. When you said in your close, you said that if this were a Boy Scout with a knife, it would be a different story. But Quan McDowell was not a Boy Scout. Do you want that one back?
No. I don't see how that's racial. I mean, this woman apparently assumed that it was, but as far as I know, there are black Boy Scouts, so it was never meant to be racial in any way. And the fact of the matter is, race was a huge part of this case, not for us, but for the prosecution. They made race an issue at
right off the beginning, right in the opening statement.
Right off the beginning. So I don't know. I disagree with that juror to suggest that we somehow introduced race into it is the opposite of what happened.
Dan, what about some of the jurors saying they felt that your client sounded rehearsed on the stand, that they didn't feel that he really was remorseful, that he was working off of talking points?
Well, obviously I prep every client before they take the stand. As far as Jason Van Dyke, I would say he was probably the least rehearsed client I've ever had. There were some points that I felt would have been strong for him to make. One of them just to show a little bit of humanity and recognize that the video looks bad and explain that it looked really bad from his perspective when he had to use force. And, you know, to be honest, Jason Van Dyke had a little trouble going there. And I think it's because he just has such a strong, vivid memory of this. And he firmly believes that his actions were correct. So, you know, I wanted him to be natural. And so I certainly didn't push that issue with him. But at the end of the day, we knew Jason wasn't going to hit a home run, but we just needed him to make contact. And I firmly believe that he did. I mean, if the jurors thought that he was not credible, that's not based on any impeachment points from the prosecutors. That's just their personal opinion. So
it's such a different thing when you watch these trials. And trials in Cook County Court are, you know, different than what you see on television, right? Or you see in movies. Sure. And what lawyers are looking for and what jurors take away from these things are very different than when you're an audience watching something on television or in a theater. And because it's all designed to hit you at, you know, at one moment. And this is like an overtime. You're building a case brick by brick, right, through this. And I thought, you know, you had a pretty good tool, which was this video that you guys have produced that was an animation, essentially, from the perspective of as close as you could get to Jason Van Dyke's perspective on this, and to see how Laquan McDonald was closing the distance gap. And he had displayed his knife. He had actually opened his knife, displayed it, and all of that. And he was closing the district and looked at the distance and looked very, very different. And he and Joseph Walsh, you know, their testimony, even though Joe Walsh was a prosecution witness, I thought it was very helpful to your side here in telling the story. Like, I would have shot him except that Jason Van Dyke was in my way. You know, I might have opened fire as well. I thought that video was really, really compelling evidence, and it seemed like the jury negated it.
I don't disagree with you. I thought it was compelling. When I first saw it, I'm like, well, can it look more dangerous, more imminent? And the person that did this is extremely talented at what he does, and he's like, no, I'm not going to do a video game. This is an accurate recreation. And you know, it didn't, like, the prosecutors made a big point about how it didn't show on the video Laquan McDonald swinging his right hand with the knife from behind his buttocks and then over his left shoulder. And his answer was pretty telling on that point. He said, well, you know, that I didn't see in the video. It was impossible to see it from the video.
Because they were trying to impeach the video by saying that you were trying to make it more dramatic.
Yeah, and then they kind of switched and said that it wasn't dramatic enough. But the critical point for the video, in our view, was that this, for 4 years, the narrative has been Laquan McDonald was walking away, Laquan McDonald was walking away. This video showed beyond any doubt, it hasn't been impeached in any manner, that Laquan McDonald, in fact, was closing the distance on Jason Van Dyke. The video showed he went from, I believe it was 39 feet to 13 feet, yeah, within a couple of seconds.
All right, and before we let you go, Dan Herbert, we're talking to, is the attorney for Jason Van Dyke. Have you spoken to the family? How are they doing?
I spoke to his wife a couple hours ago, and as a matter of fact, it was a nice talk. His daughters wrote him letters. Jason, I'm actually getting chills thinking about it, but they wrote some letters to him, and Tammy Wendt, who was part of my trial team, she actually went to the county jail and delivered these letters to Jason.
Hmm. All right. It's quite a Chicago story this year. Has been for the last 4 years, but it's quite a moment. And you know, do you have any reaction to what you saw on the streets on Friday?
Well, it wasn't. I mean, I think the way that the verdict came out, and it seemed very one-sided. You know, at the end of the day, it wasn't the outcome that we wanted, but there was a sense of relief from our standpoint. You know, Jason Van Dyke came and did his trial throughout the entire proceeding, not with the presumption of innocence, but with the presumption of guilt. So,
and that he was going to spend the rest of his life in prison.
Right. You know, it was a death sentence. It was a minimum 45 years. And, you know, now he's looking at, I would hope, the minimum, like any other defendant gets when it's their first offense, which would be 6 years at 50%, which is 3 years. You know, that when you're looking at the backdrop of a death sentence versus 3 years, you can see your daughters graduate from college. You can see your daughters get married. You can hold your grandchildren. Based upon that backdrop, there really was a sense of relief.
All right, Dan, thank you very much for coming in. Thanks, appreciate Dan. It. Dan
thank
Herbert,
you.
The attorney for Jason Van Dyke. Judy Pilak standing by. She's going to tell us what's coming up at the top of the hour in the newsroom.
Laquan McDonald's family on forgiving.
Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. Richard Roper in today. Tom Skilling is in the weather office.
Hello, Ro. Hello, thoughts. Richard.
Hi, Tom.
Tom, can I let you in on a little secret?
You can.
You can't lie to Tom Skilling. It's like lying to a priest. You can't do it. You got a face you want to confess to. Really, is what you want to do.
Gosh.
Anyway,
Richard, can you believe this?
Yeah. Listen, I don't believe
Tom,
it, but
do
I'm
know,
saying it anyway.
Do you know that I have the largest pile of the largest collection of the world's biggest grains of salt so that I can take with all everything Rose
you.
Says?
I got you. All
Tom
right.
Tom Skilling brought to us by PermaSeal Basement Systems, I might add now.
I think we just added to that pile right there.
Yeah, a pile a of something, bit. I'll tell
yeah,
you that,
exactly.
Tom.
Exactly.
Oh, hey, I know what you mean by that. All right, so, you know, in broadcasting, sometimes there are tricks in broadcasting.
Huh? Never.
Yeah.
Never.
Sometimes there are tricks, and sometimes things get, as we like to call them, time-shifted. Where we may pre-record a segment. Sometimes you watch things, and at the very bottom, in a little fine print on television says, segments may have been pre-recorded.
Yeah.
Right?
They always have that
thing.
It's always the strangest to me, Tom and Rob, when a lot of the game shows seem to say that at the end. Like, some of these things were like, what happened? Did someone knock over Drew Carey when they were told to come on down? Or did the Wheel of Fortune bump Vanna in the head? What happened?
So I'm going to admit to something here. I'm going to make a confession that the interview that's coming up in next hour or right around then with the great Ryan Gosling and Damien Chazelle. We did the interview with them in the 2 o'clock hour, and it's recorded, and we're going to play it for you. And that means we can also play the top 5 of 5 and then play the whole thing.
That's completely acceptable. That's going to be an interesting interview. I'm dying to see this movie.
I was there for it, so I can tell you without
questioning.
It went well. It went very well, and we learn things you're not learning anywhere else. And any of the other media, I've seen them on today, and they've been in Chicago. They've been very generous with their time.
They've been great, yeah.
Right,
they enjoyed their stay, as they told us.
Right, Channel 9 Morning News. Right,
they talked to Dean Richards.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So, and that was all really good. But I think we got something. And you got to remember, Damien Chazelle, he is a guy who directed Whiplash.
Mm-hmm.
Right, the movie about the drummer, the jazz drummer, kid jazz drummer.
And got J.K. Simmons an actor, best supporting actor Oscar for that performance.
Those two collaborated on La La Land.
For which he was the youngest director ever to win an Oscar.
Wow.
Tom, only 32 years old for La La Land.
And it won an Oscar for about 10 seconds before they could...
For Best Picture, a second there. But it did win, I think, six, and of course Emma Stone. And now they've teamed up again. And Tom, you're such a fan of all that stuff, too. The First Man and the Apollo mission and all that. Wait till you see this one.
I'm dying to see it.
Oh,
I saw
amazing.
One of those HBO First Look segments, and it was really amazing.
It's a beautifully shot film because not only is it done, it shows you what the inside of those cockpits actually really look like and how they feel. And they make an editorial decision to show this as a from the perspective of the astronauts, as opposed to where you get a bunch of establishing shots from outside the capsule. Oh, here's where we are in space. It's from their perspective, which makes it even more horrifying because you realize they're landing on an alien being, right? They're on an alien thing on the moon,
amazing.
And they have no idea what they're going to encounter when they get there. Is it made of cheese? They don't know. And the thing is that, and you see it from only their perspective, it is amazing, and it's done in such, and it's such a great story about the family and what they were going through, and it's like a it's a human drama, It's like the right stuff meets ordinary people. I don't know. That's what it is.
You know what's interesting is on this first look segment, they were saying that the moonscape was actually a quarry that they had set it up in. And
There's a story about that.
Yeah, is there?
There's
so we're going to hear more about,
about that, because something really wild happens while they're shooting this.
Yes. I think I know what it is, but I'm dying to hear this now. Yes. Now you've piqued our curiosity, bro.
So it's really interesting. So that's coming up.
Tom, I also, sorry to interrupt, but
go ahead.
Just want to mention quickly, too, one of the great things, and Ro and I have been lucky enough over the years to talk to, an incredible array of stars, but there's a certain hunky young actor star that brings out a different kind of crowd, and we once had a chance to talk to Mr. Channing Tatum at another station, and one of the things you find out is there are a lot more people that actually work at this radio station than I ever knew, because all of a sudden they just happen to be, which is wonderful to see everyone, but that's really nice. That's lovely to see. That everyone turns out to wish the interview subjects well there. So, you always find out, that's how many employees are here. Sure. Wow.
A warm WGN radio welcome.
Yes.
By the way, I was down, I did a podcast. I taped it over the weekend. It's the first time I've been in the radio station.
How about that?
That place is beautiful.
It's amazing. It really is, I will say.
Damien Chazelle, who made one of the most beautiful, La La Land's one of the most beautiful movies of this century, right? Cinematically. And he looks out our window and he goes, "Oh my God!"
I know.
Yeah, he really did. Because this is incredible. Yeah,
I was there and I thought, so this is where Ro sits every day. It's amazing. You guys have a panoramic view of the downtown, the likes of which.
Don't say it. I hear it too much already in news clips.
It's gorgeous.
I know what you mean.
It's gorgeous.
Tom, were you surprised to find out that Ro actually has the Iron Throne from Game of Thrones as his chair?
It is pretty amazing. Amazed at is the thickness of those doors. I mean, you guys could keep an army out if you had to.
That's our plan. You never know when the White Walkers are going to show up. We're protecting ourselves from that.
I can't open them either, so that
believe it, but Violetta. They're pretty heavy.
The doors definitely weigh twice as much as Violetta, at least.
Yes.
No accident that way. We can keep her at bay.
And can I tell another little secret since we're in Confession Monday? It's Columbus Day. So,
let it all out.
The bosses aren't here, right? Let's just go with that. So in Violetta's studio and in Kevin's studio, They have two separate studios they work out. We're not all in one big room. I know everybody kind of thinks that, but that's not how that works. They have these talent studios that are near ours, and we see each other through cameras. Mm-hmm. Their doors are super heavy, but they open the wrong way.
They do.
They were supposed to open out toward the hallway, actually into the newsroom, and they open in toward these little studios that they're in, and they can't actually fit through their doors. And the people who installed the doors at some point didn't realize that they were installing them the wrong way.
Yeah.
I like it, Tom. It's a little challenge. Every time I try to leave the studio and climb over things, it keeps you on your toes.
Yeah.
It's like a little workout leaving every time.
It is.
I look at it that way.
I believe it.
Yeah. And Tom, of course, the two kids, they've got their studios decorated like dorm rooms, so Kev's got posters of TB12.
Right, dude.
And steaks on a grill, and Violetta's keep out. This means you.
Wow. Well, when I was down there on Saturday, do they have a food spread and all the? I walked in there and they said, "Oh, help yourself to the food." And I thought, wow, you guys know how to do it.
No. This is a terrible. What day were you here? Saturday?
Yes.
This is a terrible mistake.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, my God. Because what happens is always on a Friday, for food deliveries in radio stations for the morning show or in the afternoons, like for us, for the Carnarvon Wagon, people drop off food, and that's a big thing. And generally that food sits here until the overnight Sunday night and a Monday morning, and they're still eating it.
Yeah, be careful.
So in other words, that might have been from Steve Cochran's show or your show.
Don't eat the crab salad in a radio station ever. Yeah. It could be four days old at room temperature.
Yeah, Monday morning, I'm like, did you guys order this pizza?
Yeah, no.
Today?
Everyone still eats it. There's always an engineer grazing on the pizza.
Sure.
You're like, dude, that was from Friday.
Yeah.
He's like, I know. Just the crust.
Yeah. Great.
I know what Richard's saying, though, about because we have some pretty big names coming here for the morning show.
Sure.
And we're sent a memo saying, now, look, cool it, because we want these folks to feel welcome. And we don't want to overwhelm them with, autograph seekers and all the rest on the staff here. But That would be really, really cool to talk to Ryan about this.
Well, it's really interesting stories, and they this is a great film, a great film.
Yeah.
So, all right, what do you got coming up in the weather? What's happening here?
Well, we're unseasonably warm. This is 20 degrees above normal. The normal high this time of the year is 66, so to have mid-80s going is, you know, off the charts unusual. We got another day like that tomorrow. It'll be fairly warm Wednesday, and then we go through a crash later in the week. And, of course, down on the Gulf Coast, we've got Michael bearing down on the Florida Panhandle. This could be a big story. This looks like it might be a major Cat 3 hurricane by the time it reaches the coast. We'll see, but they're going to get a heck of a blow down there. This thing started forming Saturday off the Yucatan, and, you know, it looks like it's going to intensify this year.
Oh, Tom, you know, Anderson Cooper just got his hair dry from the last storm and got all the windbreakers back from the dry cleaners. Are you telling me?
Yeah.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
You know what's really mean about that? This thing is going to produce heavy rains again on the Carolinas. Is it?
Oh, really? Because it's going to come. It's going to backdoor it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to go up into the panhandle and then cut across.
Cut across. Yeah. So this is just what those folks need. And, you know, Rick Knapp, who was the former director of the National Hurricane Center, he's now with the Weather Channel, but he's saying that this thing could be one of the biggest hurricanes to landfall in the Big Bend and Florida Panhandle area. It's definitely the strongest from the looks of things in 13 years.
Well, and 13 years ago, there wasn't the level of development that there is there now.
Wow.
That whole area, I mean, they used to used to affectionately refer to that as the Redneck Riviera, is really it's a gorgeous, gorgeous part of the Gulf of Mexico. Is just such a unique body of water.
And the beaches are beautiful.
Yes.
And beautiful.
Yeah, because it's generally shallow and a little less, you know, the wave action is different. It's not an ocean. It's
well, you know what's bathtub. I was looking at the wave forecasts on this, and they have a product that looks at these so-called rogue waves or the possibility. They're talking about seas of 20 to 30 feet off the coastline there, and there could be a local 70 or 75-foot wave offshore.
Jeez.
And the continental shelf goes out there, so the water is fairly narrow, and that's the same thing we had with Florence coming in on the Carolinas, and that can pile the water up against the shoreline, so storm surge becomes a big issue with this this storm too. So it's good. We'll be watching that. To come. Yeah.
Yeah, and a real fall weekend coming up here in Chicago.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Going to be cool.
I don't want to talk about it. I heard somebody say a number that started with a 3, and I don't want to talk about it.
Well, that's a nighttime thing.
I don't care! Do you think I can?
Richard, I hope you came.
Wish me luck, Tom.
Yeah, did you come armed with chemo therapy? You know, just
aromatherapy. All the therapies. All the therapies. Aromatherapy.
Exactly. The light board and all the rest.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Tom.
You bet.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Tom. Bye. Here you go. Bye-bye, guys.
Oh, gosh.
All right. Judy, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour in the WGN newsroom?
Well, dire warnings as Hurricane Michael barrels toward the panhandle.
Oh, it's just such a common name, too, Michael, which is bad because, you know, one of the three people are named Michael in the United States, right?
So people won't take it seriously? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah, they're gonna, that's mine. That's named after me. All right. What do you got there, Violetta? Coming up at 5:40, our interview with Ryan Gosling and Damien Chazelle. First Man is the movie about Neil Armstrong's life and landing on the moon. First Man on the Moon. And I would like to say that it's an amazing movie. Absolutely amazing. And it was very kind of them to come in studio with us, Richard, a few hours ago and record this interview. And we're going to play it in two parts at 5:40 and 6:10 tonight.
Well, that's one of the great things. One of the many, many, many great things about radio. And look, we both have done a lot of television as well. And, you know, this is no criticism of our brethren and sisters, but you usually get 5 or 6 minutes tops if you're going to get a television segment. That's a long television segment in this day and age. No matter who you're interviewing. I mean, you watch the network shows and you're like, okay, Barack, thanks for stopping by, but we got to move on because it's time for who's turning 100. I mean, that's just the nature of the business. And we had the luxury of close to a half hour of conversation with Ryan Gosling and Damien Chazelle, which is why, as Ro mentioned, we're going to split it up over two segments so you can get the full in-depth conversation. Yeah. There are a lot of times, too, where, you know, quite frankly, I'm happy to just have 5 minutes with some interview subjects. Just depends who it is. I found myself looking at the clock sometimes. Oh, 3 minutes, though? I don't need the extra 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Depends on who you're talking to.
No. you have a filmmaking genius in Damien Chazelle, who is, you know, basically, his first three films have all been Oscar nominated. Yep. Think about that.
Whiplash,
La La Land, and this will without question be Oscar
absolutely
nominated. Maybe the most number of nominations, like La La Land was 2 years ago.
Whiplash is so intense, and it's a movie about jazz, and you just can't
incredible
stop watching. It's awesome film.
And semi-autobiographical, as Damien wanted to be a jazz musician and had a teacher similar to that when he was a young guy. And as Ro mentioned, in terms of like the Oscar categories too, when you watch First Man, you think already like sound editing and, you know, some of the technical categories, how does it not win in those, but also the acting, including Claire Foy as Neil Armstrong's wife, who's got almost as big a role as Neil Armstrong, the character in the movie,
and
as
the
heart of the film.
And it's so funny because you when you see her in the film, you're like, where have I seen her before? You know, they drive you nuts when you're like watching. So it doesn't drive you because you know all these things. but like the average human being stares at this stuff and goes, I know her from somewhere. Where do I know her from? And she's the Queen of England, if you're just wondering, from The Crown.
That's exactly right. And yet every inch believable as a 1960s era wife and mother, you know, trying to hold her family together while dad goes off to maybe land on the moon.
Yes.
I'll be home later.
Yeah. Well, that was, I think, isn't that the plot point of it? That maybe he won't be home later? And it's kind of driving some people nuts
And this is one of the scenes that you'll see in the commercials, too, which is great because Kyle Chandler, who's a great actor, you know, some of the NASA guys at one point are trying to reassure her that we've got everything under control. And she says, no, you don't.
Like
you
the Friday Night Lights guy, by the way, who's in this, who's amazing in this, too. And then you also see, some of the stuff, this is a little more of an unblinking version of events than The Right Stuff, which The Right Stuff took some, because it was based on Tom Wolfe's book, the great Tom Wolfe. So it was pretty critical of bureaucracy and stupidity, at different levels. And the real heroes were the guys who had to ride the rocket and do all this stuff. But then, you know, in Apollo 13, I mean, everybody is earnest and trying to do the right thing, which is, you know, this movie falls right into that triple feature.
Yeah, it really does.
If you want to see the right stuff, and actually they have almost the exact same scene, even though it's from two different events, but very similar events that happen, that occur, and to see it done by two different directors in a way, and it's so fascinating. It's such a great moment.
I always love movies where you see it from just different perspectives. So the actors, or I should say the real life historical figures who are front and center in one movie are now supporting players or just on the fringe. So there is somebody playing Commander Lovell, but it's not, it's a small role as opposed to Tom Hanks playing him in Apollo 13. There is somebody playing Chuck Yeager, but it's not Sam Shepard in The Right Stuff, because now we're shifting the focus, of course. And the Neil Armstrong, you know, it's fascinating too, because people always talked about how the myth became that he was a recluse. He wasn't really a recluse, Neil Armstrong, but he just wasn't interested in being out there everywhere. He did do endorsements. He was a Chrysler spokesperson for years, and he did, you know, he occasionally would make public appearances. He just wasn't interested in becoming a celebrity ever.
The exact opposite of, let's say like a John Glenn, you know, who, you know, loved what he was doing and you know, turned it into public service as a you know, by being an elected official.
Sure.
Right. Or Chuck Yeager, who, you know, to me, Chuck Yeager wasn't a celebrity until The Right Stuff came out, though.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, people knew he was a celebrity, he was doing his signing stuff and around. But then when The Right Stuff came out, and even played a little role in that movie, he was the bar back in the bar at Edwards Air Force Base. Yeah. Right. And then he just, you know, took off to being on, you know, almost everything. Right.
He's even commercials and everything.
Yeah. And there was a moment where there wasn't a watch brand that didn't have Chuck Yeager wearing it.
Yeah.
He would literally have to roll up. He was like a guy who was stealing watches on Rush Street. He would have have an entire arm of, which one are you today?
But Neil Armstrong never did like the commercial where like some actress like would be like Barbara Eden would be playing his wife and be like, "You may have not have wiped your feet when you came off the moon, but you better before you come into this house, sir."
Yeah,
you know,
it is fascinating, and it's fascinating to have these two guys in too, because you got the filmmaker, and sometimes filmmakers can be obtuse to talk to, and actors can be reluctant to talk, and we did not have that with these two guys.
That was excellent.
So. Just stay tuned for that coming up. All right. Other pieces of business here that I need to take care of. We will also be talking about as we get ready for the week of the NFL was such a crazy, we've had three crazy weeks in the NFL. And I would like, I'm going to make an official protest to Roger Goodell, head of the NFL.
All right.
I do not like how we handle overtime in the NFL anymore. I just don't like it.
Yeah.
I think I never liked it.
Mm.
And now I really don't like it. I have a suggestion to that. And there are too many games going to overtime now. Right? There's too much potential for a tie.
Yeah, it does seem that way, doesn't it?
And I got problems. I got problems with that. Hogue's going to join us a little bit later on in the program.
What about
we're going to talk about week six in the NFL.
Bears back in action. And that Green Bay kicker, he missed 107 field goals yesterday, I understand. And 47 extra points. They should have won by 100 points.
So Kevin and I were doing the pre-game with Mr. Cochran. We were guests on Mr. Cochran's pre-game show yesterday at the United Center. And we were all talking about what a great day it is that Green Bay lost.
Oh,
didn't matter. The Bears didn't play. It wouldn't even matter if the Bears had played and lost. It's just a good day when Green Bay loses.
We knew yesterday was going to be a great day. Right before that show started, the Packers had lost. Mason Crosby missed four field goals.
Four out of five.
And a PAT. Now, if this wasn't a guy who's 34, a longtime veteran, has always been a steady kicker for the Packers, he would have been cut already.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, if this was even a second-year guy, he would have been cut. But that was a disaster. Yeah.
It was the differential. That's what they lost by.
Right.
Which is really.
Rodgers was doing a thing, mounting a comeback, but when your kicker can't make a field goal, kind of tough to do that.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. So we've got, we have thoughts on that. And the Bears now, I mean, head and shoulders up in the NFC North. How about that?
Yeah, Vikings were close to losing to the Eagles. They pulled out a victory. But right now, Bears 3-1-0, Packers 2-2-1. Vikings 2-2-1 and the Lions 2-3.
Yeah, that's like we all thought. You know, that tie is going to mean something.
The tie would be the tiebreaker. Yeah, and as we all thought around this time of year, the Browns and the Bears would have a much better record than the Philadelphia Eagles.
Look at the Browns 2-2.
Break up the Browns. Oh, man.
You know, it has been a great, because, you know, for the past couple of years, it felt like the NFL couldn't do anything right, whether it was how they handled the kneeling or concussions and things like that. And people were like, well, the ratings were down, however you wanted to look at the ratings. The first month of the NFL season so far has been awesome. There's been some great games so far.
Yes.
It doesn't help or doesn't hurt that the Bears have been winning, so maybe we're a little bit more excited here. But
and that's when they talk about the ratings being down.
It's a little skewed.
Well, it's skewed because in the major markets, you just look at the top five markets, and in those markets, first of all, L.A. didn't have teams until last year, right?
Right.
And then they had two teams, and then they're trying to figure out what to do with that.
Yeah.
The Bears were not good in the number three market. In the number one market, you had New York, Giants, and Jets, both futile, right? And San Francisco, two teams, both bad. So let's not sit around and go, oh, the ratings are bad and it's all about politics. Not everything is politics in this country. Not everything is politics of how you decide what you're going to do on a Sunday afternoon. In some households it is, and at least one member of that household will show up at your Thanksgiving dinner. But is not the way that most of America lives. And so when the football ratings are down, there's a lot of different reasons for that, because it's spread out. There's different ways to watch it. If you're watching it on DirecTV and you're watching it on you've gone to the Sunday ticket and you're watching it out of market, you're not. It's not the same ratings.
Ah.
If you're doing something else where you're watching it now over the top this year, you can watch it on Hulu, right? There's a lot of different reasons for it. It's still the greatest show on turf. It is the most interesting 3 hours you're going to spend, I think, of any sporting event. Now, you'd need a lawyer to sit next to you sometimes and explain what's going on, which is why they put one in the booth now with them at all times. Let's go to our official, you know, they got a guy they go to in L.A. or New York or wherever, Toronto, wherever the hell the person is, and they're sitting there trying to explain it to you.
Well, I don't really know, because if this were a catch, I mean, I just don't know.
Yeah. Guys are getting roughing the passer penalties during the bye week.
Right. But we're not playing. I'm not suiting up.
That has been the biggest issue this year so far.
Roughing the passer. You look at TB12 the wrong way.
Right, exactly. You laid hands. You can't lay hands. You can't. No, we're not going to allow that. So anyway, it was a very fun week, even though the Bears weren't playing. And then the Bears, this Miami team, was a little surprisingly stronger than I thought they were going to be yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they ended up losing, but
they're 3-2.
Yeah, off to a much better start than I think a lot of people anticipated.
Yeah, so I'm just saying that this is going to be this might not be so easy. And then you go down to Miami, and the players tend to party down in Miami when they get there. This could be a test of the Nagy world when you take a team on the road to a party town.
You lock them in the hotel room, curfew.
Yeah, you see, because these guys are all, you know, there's always something. I'll never forget before the Super Bowl down in Miami in 2006. And I saw one of the players. Uh-oh. I was going back to where I was staying. I was staying at a house in between Miami and Fort Lauderdale. And I'm on 95, and I'm driving in my little rental car. And a guy drives by in an electric green Maserati.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
With Chicago Bears plates on.
Oh, no.
Right past me.
Oh, boy.
And it was like 12:30.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, oh, it's the Super Bowl tomorrow. So I'm just saying.
Behave.
I'm not blaming it completely on that. But I'm just going to say the owner of that car didn't have a good game.
Oh,
I don't know who was driving the car, but the owner of that car did not have a good game. Oh, and since he had a vanity plate that had his number and his initials on it, with the Bears thing around it, it was just that.
Inconspicuous.
All right. May I now check in with Judy and find out what's coming up at the top of the hour in the WGN newsroom.
A lizard in the lake.
What?
Yep, you heard it right.
Oh, my God.
Stay tuned.
This one? That lake I'm looking at right now?
The lake that you swim in.
Boy. That one right... Oh, I don't swim in that lake. But that lake right there?
Ooh. Well, not the river, but the lake.
Oh, God.
Lizard in the lake.
A big one.
Do you let him?
Sounds like a new blockbuster, Roper.
Rocanto with Anna DeBlanchis right here on 720 WGN. Mr. Richard Roper in for Anna today.
Do.
That's in for himself. He's here all the time anyway. So
I love hanging out at the station here, seeing all my friends and everybody else, and Ro.
And you brought in your buddies, Ryan Gosling and Damien Chazelle today.
Signed them in and everything downstairs, right?
And you, they're going to be on the program. We're going to play you that interview coming up at 5:40 this afternoon.
Cool.
It's really amazing. This movie, First Man, is spectacular. If you are if you like the movies about the space. Okay, so, all right, so a buddy of mine calls me last week. I'll get to the top five in just 1 second here, gentlemen.
Okay.
Buddy of mine calls me last week. He's dating this woman. And he's like, hey, listen, I gotta go over by A Star Is Born. Are there airplanes in that movie?
Oh, jeez.
I said, well, yes, there actually are a couple of airplanes in the movie. Sure. You know, it's a rock and roll movie. I go, you're going to love it. Oh, God. I got to do it. Otherwise, you know, I'm not going to get nothing tonight.
Oh, jeez.
You know? So, he's telling me this whole story. And I'm like, it's a good movie. You're going to like it. So if you are like my friend, who I shall call Gump for no other reason, you are going to love First Man, and if you want to bring your wife or your girlfriend or both or whatever to the movie, they're going to love it too.
Them both at the same time.
Oh, boy.
If it's sitting on either side. It's a human story, but it is also a great... Oh, my God. What a wild ride it is.
First Man, yeah.
Takes you to the moon, and literally you feel like you're going. It's crazy. So there you have it.
We'll talk a little bit later about Star is Born. Did very well. And I also have sent Stormy Daniels my treatment for A Star is Porn, in which she plays an up-and-coming lounge singer. I can't tell you the rest of the plot.
Meets a president?
I can't tell you the rest of the plot.
That would be very interesting. Yeah. I find that. Oh, God. Oh, God. And now, did you see? All right. I just had to mention that. Did you see that she's apologizing now for body shaming Donald Trump?
Yeah.
She also apologized to the mushroom industry, which I thought was weird.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
I didn't fully understand what was going on, but all right.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Checking in at
number five.
Okay. I could have done that a lot better, you know. Thank you, cheesy DJ guy. Dan Herbert, the attorney for Jason Van Dyke, was in studio about an hour ago to discuss next steps for his client. And one juror said that she was offended by the closing argument by Mr. Herbert, in which he had referred to the Boy Scout and thought it might be offensive. Hmm. And he then, do you want that one back?
No, I don't see how that's racial. I mean, this woman apparently assumed that it was, but as far as I know, there are Black Boy Scouts. So it was never meant to be racial in any way. And the fact of the matter is, race was a huge part of this case, not for us, but for the prosecution. They made race an issue at
right off the beginning, right in the opening statement.
Right off the beginning. So I don't know. I disagree with that juror to suggest that we somehow introduced race into it is the opposite of what happened.
Yeah, I mean, the Boy Scout thing, I think it was really more that one juror who was African-American said, you know, she felt like there was that was the first time that she felt that race had been interjected in it and that there was a racial tinge to it. She may have been responding also to, without, you know, guessing too much here, but that a lot of the defense here was to also point out that Laquan McDonald had been very troubled throughout his teenage years. And had been in and out of institutions. They put people up on the stand who had been guards of his when he was in different juvenile circumstances and how uncontrollable at times he was. So there was a lot of trying to indict the victim in this as well. And I think that some jurors are going to take to that and go, oh, I guess, yeah, that was a dangerous situation for the police officer. Although the police officer would not have known, Jason Van Dyke would not have known all the detail of that. But the idea was, you know, you're out on the street and there's a person with a knife who is potentially dangerous. And what are you going to do? Which I think is the ultimate question that still doesn't quite get answered. But what I'm amazed by, and I continue to be, you know, very relieved by this, and I hope that this goes on, is that the fact that there has been a conviction here. Regardless of your how you feel about politics or regardless of how you feel about the law in this case and the conviction, it seems to have lowered the temperature in the city.
Right.
You know, all of the protesters were making speeches about how, you know, justice has finally been served here and that this is a new day. And does it really, you know, this is all that that they wanted. Now, you're going to have a guy who's going to spend somewhere between 3 and 6 years in jail, probably, as a result of this. That would be my guess that's what Dan Herbert said, and that's what a lot of legal analysts are saying. And, you know, is it justice to send a guy, there's a lot of police officers out there who are going to say, is it justice to send a guy away to Class X prison in Illinois for 6 years of his life for doing his job? But this is what has happened. And if any good comes out of this, in the sense that it makes it makes the city any safer, or it makes it any less contentious, then and I hope something good comes out of it, and maybe that would be it. Yeah. But all right, so there you have it. do think that the sentencing is going to have its own ramifications here. And we just have to see, you know, the jury has spoken. Everybody has to respect that part of the system. We got to respect something, my God. In this country, we're so caught up in tearing down every institution. And these jurors did, you know, they did. They went in there and they did the job. We talked to a juror on Friday, you know, called us and, you know, juror 248. We want to thank her again for doing that. She was great. And she, I think she exemplified, you know, what that's all about. These are citizens.
They were so educated. On the topic
and dedicated and sincere, absolutely, yeah, they really were.
I was shocked at how well spoken they were about the terms that they were defining.
They took it very seriously, as they should, and were really, passionate and informed. I agree,
and thoughtful about what they were going about. They really they listened to their instructions and they followed the rules of that.
Yeah.
And that's what you have to do. It's a long 3 weeks. It's a long case, and you have to break that stuff down. And I thought, and she was amazing in her responses to us about all of it. It was pretty fast, and she wanted to clarify things that we get wrong in the press in the aftermath of these things. Because there's, you know, things that are misheard or things that are exaggerated, and she wanted to put everything in proper context. Yeah. But I just learned something else that's very important. I think Violetta should not be on a jury.
Why?
I was so impressed with the fact that they knew the terms.
Well,
don't you have to know the terms?
Well, it would be very disheartening if they didn't, and that they were putting someone away. So, dealing with the importance of the case,
I think she'd be a good alternate.
It'd be a good starter. Just to scare them, like, hey, I could be here,
but in the meantime, I'll help with the catering.
Although I will say this, in the jury room, they'd all know what was happening outside the jury room because her voice carries. I've never met anybody. Yesterday at the United Center, I literally, from across the United Center, I heard her talking. It's the damnedest thing.
Yelled at me like,
number four.
See, she just talked over that. Yeah. Latest example of the president highlighting Chicago violence happened today at the International Association of Chiefs of Police in Florida. He said he's going to send the federal government with his great Attorney General Jeff Sessions.
Hmm.
You mean the guy that he called a weasel a couple of weeks ago on Twitter to figure this out?
Stop and frisk works. The crime spree is a terrible blight on that city, and we'll do everything possible to get it done. I know the law enforcement people in Chicago, and I know how good they are. They could solve the problem if they were simply allowed to do their job and do their job properly, and that's what they want to do. So, Chicago, we're going to start working with you as of today.
Okay, but then we call around to the city today, and they're like, well, first of all, city's off today. I don't know, Columbus Day.
Okay.
But secondly, it's like, what is it? Did we know this was coming?
Also strongly oppose efforts from politicians to shackle local police departments and prevent them from cooperating with their federal partners. So let's see whether or not Chicago, as an example, locally accepts help. They need it. And we'll straighten it out fast. We're going to straighten it out fast. I assume they want to straighten it out. Sometimes I think maybe, is it possible that they don't? But we're going to be there. We're going to try and help them.
What?
A little guide to the inner workings of the presidential mind there at the end.
Plus, I got a guy who doesn't care about the Constitution. It's going to be perfect.
Sometimes they wouldn't.
Now I got a Supreme Court that's going to let me do whatever I want. So we're going to crack some heads.
And it's always, this is so simple. It's so fast. We're going to get this really. If this were so, you made the point earlier, Richard Rober, if this were so simple and fast, we wouldn't have this problem. Yeah.
Remember when he campaigned here and he said he had talked to an unnamed and still unidentified Chicago police officer or administrator who said in 1 week he could straighten out the crime problem in Chicago. In 1 week.
He hasn't even come back since then.
Well, right, because remember what else happened to him when he was there that day?
Oh, you know what? Keep driving. I actually don't want to go to this rally.
Yeah, right. It was the only rally in the 2016 cycle that got canceled right before it happened because the crowd was turning.
I'm the only one who went on stage that night to report back to you guys.
That's true. All right. We'll get to your 3-2-1. But first, Violetta's got first, Judy is going to tell us what's coming up in the newsroom at the bottom of the hour. Judy.
Big promises delivered.
You know, for those with PTSD, it helps to have a best friend. See how dogs are helping survivors of Chicago violence to heal. Tuesday's cover story on WGN TV News at 9.
All right, Con Show with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WTN. Top 5 continues. We have worked our way up to
number 3.
Just hours after Brett Kavanaugh was confirmed by the Senate to become a justice of the Supreme Court, Saturday Night Live aired its second episode of the season and wasted no time. No time.
Okay, very, very cool chill energy here. Several of the senators also appear to be wearing goggles.
That's right. These are for the Miller High Life, the champagne of beers.
Yeah, to celebrate Brett Kavanaugh, the natty light of judges. All right, now listen, everyone. Let's keep this horny male energy going till the midterms.
They said everybody was celebrating from white men over 60 to white men over 70. It was,
wait, hold on. We have that.
Oh.
And there are a lot of pacemakers being put to the test Jeez. Tonight. And I see Mitch McConnell here. Mitch, how are you feeling?
That was awesome. Woo!
Do you feel like this is a win you can be proud of?
Oh, hell yeah, Dana. Republicans read the mood of the country, and we could tell the people really wanted Kavanaugh. Everyone's pumped, from white men over 60 to white men over 70. We did it. Big up to PJ and Squee.
Okay. Oh, man. Well, I don't, you know, I got a feeling now that this is, I don't think Democrats really helped themselves with this at all, because at the end of it, it did seem to be, the goalposts seem to be moving a little bit, and as offensive as I think as this is to a lot of women who have gone through this, or their friends have gone through this, or relatives or kids or whatever, parents that you know about guys who did not obey the rules of hey no, and this is. But I think at the end, the Democrats, like they've done so many times, they snatched defeat from the jaws of victory here by overplaying their hand.
Yeah.
And I just don't, I think this is going to end up helping Republicans in November more than it's going to end up helping Democrats. And they say that, women are going to, come flocking to the polls here to vote. But if it were Donald Trump on the ballot, that might be true. But it's your local congressman on the ballot. And in some states, it's a senator. And so it's like, but they're not Donald Trump. And what did they stand for? And if there's enough, and if you like them for different reasons, I don't see this having the kind of impact that that Democrats think it's going to have. I have an idea for Democrats. Have a message. Have a point.
Exactly.
It's so much better for the listener. All right. Let us now get to
number 2.
Oh, yeah. Dude.
Uh-oh.
Ryan Lochte's in the news.
Oh no. That's probably not a good thing.
Yeah. Olympic swimmer, Ryan Lochte. Remember him? Yeah. Remember him? Remember he was in Brazil and they went partying. Remember that? And they like robbed a gas station accidentally.
Allegedly. Dude. Remember, that's what they told us to say.
Yeah.
Legendarily.
Yeah. Hey, Ma, guess what? Hey, I was like in a shootout and I robbed a gas station, but don't tell anybody.
Oh, keep it on the DL, Ma.
Well, he had a long day, apparently. And was it Friday into Saturday? I think it was. And he ended up in, it started in California, but he ended up in Gainesville, Florida. He took a flight. He tried to kick in his own hotel door, room door in wherever he was in California.
You hate when you forget your key card in the room.
So the police were called there, and he had to make amends with the hotel. He didn't get charged with anything, but he was drunk. And he did kick in the door, but he paid the money and he got...
Gave him a silver medal. Hey, I got a silver medal. I'm running out of these.
Then he went back to Gainesville, Florida, where I guess he lives near Gainesville, right? So he's going home and he gets... he was driving and then he rear-ended a car in front of him. Dude!
Oh,
why did you have to stop like that? But he'd been really drunk the night before, like the morning before.
Oh.
So there was a question about whether he was still drunk when he was driving his car, whatever it was, 15, 16 hours later. Mm. Yeah!
It could happen.
Yeah! Jeez.
911, what's the status of emergency?
Oh, yeah, I would like to, we just got in an accident.
Okay, where at?
It's Northwest 39th Street and Northwest 24th.
Okay, you sure not?
Like in the intersection, yeah.
Okay, you sure not 39th Avenue?
No, Northwest 24th Street and Northwest 29th Street. Yeah, Avenue.
There's so many numbers.
So confusing.
Wait, 24. Wait, they're going in directions too. And I'm really not drunk. I'm just stupid.
All right, sorry.
Police officer just arrived.
They just got there? Okay, so I think we just got a call in. Are you all blocking traffic?
Yes.
Okay, and is it GPD that's on scene or is it ASO?
What?
Is it a police department officer or a Lodge County Sheriff's
Officer? I think it's just a Gainesville Police Department officer.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you know him? Should I put him on the phone? Maybe you know him.
Jeez. This is lame, bro. Let's go get some tacos.
And,
Are you and were you involved?
Yes.
Okay.
I rear-ended the people in front of me.
Okay. Was anybody injured?
No.
Okay. All right. I'll let you go if they're there, okay?
No, I'll.
All right.
When you mean anybody injured, do you mean me? Because, I'm cool.
I guess the hotel incident happened in California. He flew to Florida the next day.
Right. Well, no, it happened. It was the same day. The same day, because it was like at 3 o'clock in the morning in California, he had to kick in his door. And then at 9 o'clock at night the same day.
Right.
It's like 20-something hours apart, but it's still, when you include the time change and everything.
That's
but
where he went to school, down in Gainesville.
I'm just glad he didn't have a layover in O'Hare. Jeez.
Dude, remember all the babes in school?
I know. I was a gator getter.
Wow.
I was a gator getter. You get it? I was like gators. Oh, man. And I was getting them.
Babes.
The gatorettes. Dude. Man. Cool. Hell yeah. what comes after two?
Wow.
Number one.
Hello. Row back to you. Thank you.
Holly.
First man is the riveting story of NASA's mission to land a man on the moon, focusing on the life of Neil Armstrong from 1961 to 1969. It's a first-person account based on a book by James Hansen, I should say. And it is one of the most dangerous missions in history. People had no idea how rickety that thing actually was until you see this movie, which stars Ryan Gosling and was directed by Damien Chazelle. The two of them made La La Land together and now have made one of the best space movies of all time. They were on this very radio. They will be on this very radio program. We recorded the interview just before this show, and here is what they said.
You know, you sort of love Neil because you love the people around him. Mm-hmm. You know, you realize how it says a lot about him by who he's surrounded by. And I felt that was a beautiful way to get to know Neil, because I didn't have the opportunity to meet him. But to get to know somebody through their family, through their children, through their friends, their coworkers. Mm-hmm. It's just they painted a very loving portrait of him. He was very admired by the people around him.
That's Ryan Gosling. I didn't hear a word he was saying because I looked into the deep pools of his blue eyes. So I don't know. They said something. We'll find out. I'll find out what he said coming up in the interview that we did with him. And that's going to be right after we close up this.
The top five at five.
All right, stepping into the studio, a couple of young kids just starting out in the business, Ryan Gosling and Damien Chazelle, who are behind this movie, The First Man, and Richard Roper is saying that The First Man is a movie that a human being should not miss. So congratulations on that. That is a great, great, great movie. And I got to say, I'm a crazy space aviation guy when it comes to movies. And the opening scene, which, The Right Stuff has a similar kind of concept scene in it. And I always thought that's one of the coolest scenes I've ever seen in film. and you beat it. And that is saying something right there. So that was absolutely amazing. So congratulations on
this. Thank
you. Ryan, tell us a little bit about how this started for you. Is this a story that you tracked with when you were a kid that you were interested in? What brought you to this project?
Well, it's interesting that you bring up that first scene, because when I first met Damien, this was before La La Land, we met about this film. And I think essentially you just described that scene in detail. You know, I was tucked under the wing of a B-52 bomber in an X-15 about to be shot into the atmosphere, and he said, you know, like, that's how I'd like to start, and we'll end on the moon, and then we'll figure out the rest.
Pretty much the same way NASA did it. About 61 to 69, we'll figure it out.
Right? And then I had this opportunity to read Jim Hansen's book about Neil, and I realized just how little I knew, how much sacrifice was involved in these missions, that we have this sort of gilded image of them being a predestined success,
right,
but that it was anything but. It was, this one of the greatest human achievements, and yet it was littered with failure, the road to it. And so I thought Damien's instinct to focus on Neil and Janet Armstrong and just take a deep dive into them personally and experiencing this through their eyes was really inspiring. And so that's sort of how it began.
I'm going to jump into and do the business part of this. The movie opens everywhere, including, of course, in Chicago, October 12th. That's this Friday. First Man, it has 112% on Rotten Tomatoes. First time ever. It's actually over 100%. In all seriousness, it's a great film. So check it out, guys. Damien, I want to talk a little bit about your techniques here. And Ro mentioned, the opening scene and then, of course, the moon landing. And there's so much intensity and almost a claustrophobic feel you brought to this. And also, if you could talk a little bit about the use of music, which obviously is a huge thing to you. And sometimes we have this operatic score and then we get that dead silence. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that for us.
Yeah, I mean, I guess both things, on both fronts, it was about trying to really give the audience a truly immersive experience, you know. So hopefully you come out of this movie feeling like you've been on these missions, you've been to space, and also that you've been privy to these really private, intimate moments between Neil and Janet and their kids. Ryan had a great way of sort of describing what we were trying to aim for the movie back when we were working on it. It was the moon in the kitchen sink. It was about, how can you use those extremes? You have the biggest cosmic adventure in human history on the one hand, but on the other hand, you know, this was going to be, it needed to be a really personal family story about this marriage and this family struggling through the years that led up to the moon landing. And so we felt like if we could shoot it in a way where the audience always felt like they were right there physically, they were there in the capsule. And sometimes that means only seeing what the astronauts would see, not going outside, that they were there in the household, that they were there with the kids and with the families, sort of as Ryan was saying, you could hopefully come away feeling like you got to see what Neil saw. Down to like moments on the moon where we shoot a lot of it from Neil's POV. Yeah. That was the angle I wanted to take.
It's great. Genius because it's intimate. It's such an intimate film and it allows you to have great intimate performances because the camera's real tight and it feels like a family drama. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, you're going to work in a space capsule, right? And it takes you back and forth in such a way. And I also, I'm sorry, I'm obsessed with the first scene, but there is a moment in that where your use of sound and structure and what Neil Armstrong is seeing in that moment and the changes where he leaves the atmosphere, spoiler alert, leaves the atmosphere and he sees that arc of the very thin veneer layer of what's left of the atmosphere. And we've seen it a couple times in both science stuff and in like I said, in the right stuff and other things. But all of a sudden you realize it was shot like how they'd really see it. Because you get inside any kind of government-built plane or anything, and it's kind of cheap inside feeling, right? Mm-hmm. You look at it, and it's not what you think. It's not Hollywood.
It always looks like it needs a paint job.
And you made the decision to make it look like that, not to make it look like it really looks. Right.
Yeah, well, you know, the those real planes, those real capsules, I wouldn't call them reassuring if you're about to get in them, you know, the look of any of them.
Right.
I think for the whole movie, we wanted people to feel the fear, you know, feel, my God, what these people were willing to do, the capsules they were willing to put themselves into, the risks they were willing to take. And yeah, you're talking about, I mean, sound certainly played a big part of that, just trying to immerse the audience in that sound sensory experience. Music, you were talking about, was a big part of that. Just hopefully making you feel almost like virtual reality, you know, where you just, even though, you know, this is a movie, it's a two-dimensional medium, you're sitting there in the audience, you're not actually going into space, that hopefully you just feel on a sensory level like you're having that experience.
Let's talk about the performance here, Ryan, if we can, really quickly, about the idea of Neil Armstrong as a figure, because obviously he passed away, you know, well before you were considering this role, right? So how were you able to find him and his voice? Because he doesn't have much of a voice. He's one of the quietest, lowest profile American heroes.
Yeah, well, there aren't a lot of physical things you can physicalize in order to create the performance and create windows into him, but there's an extraordinary depth of character to him that the more you learn about him, the more fascinating he is, the more his reasons for being remote. There's just many layers there, and the challenge was, but also, you know, was to honor that and not to sort of make him into somebody that is more cinematic and fun to watch, but somebody that, you know, to honor the depth that was there and to try and create windows into him so that the audience could see into sort of, for instance, the grief that he was experiencing during the course of these missions, mm-hmm. or just the extraordinary amount of just how brilliant he was, how he was a person who lived his life outside of his own self-interest, and he's heroic in these ways that are you know, that only if you have a filmmaker like Damien who wants to pay attention to those subtleties and wants to create those windows so that we can see into the character, you know, you're not going to get a chance to really get to know Neil in the way that he deserves to be known.
But that's one of the great things about the film and the story is Neil Armstrong was the perfect man for that job, mm-hmm. because he wasn't interested in glory. He wasn't mm-hmm. interested in becoming a superstar. And Damien does a brilliant job of peppering the supporting cast with all kinds. First of all, almost every actor we recognize, you know, even if it's just one scene where, like, mm-hmm. you know, there's Kieran Hines and there's Patrick Fugit and there, I mean, just actor after actor, Corey Stoll, and some of them were such bigger than life characters, so it's mm-hmm. great. And of course, Claire playing Neil's wife is, you know, gets the big emotional scene. So you're there as the rock solid heart and soul of the film, but all these other things are kind of exploding around you with these other folks.
Yeah, and creating, texture. Like, You sort of love Neil because you love the people around him. Mm-hmm. You know, you realize how it says a lot about him by who he's surrounded by. And I felt that was a beautiful way to get to know Neil, because I didn't have the opportunity to meet him. But to get to know somebody through their family, through their children, through their friends, their coworkers. Mm-hmm. It's just they painted a very loving portrait of him. He was very admired by the people around him.
All right, we'll pick up more of this interview on the other side. We recorded that interview with Ryan Gosling and Damien Chazelle in the 2 o'clock hour here, and so we're playing that back for you. And we have, in the second half, it gets kind of interesting as they talk about some of the more dramatic aspects of making the film. Because it is, as Richard Roper tells us, there are a lot of daring things here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the film itself is just, you know, they took some interesting approaches. And yes, everybody knows, like, you know, what happens. Neil Armstrong, you know, spoiler alert, does they eventually get to the moon. You may have seen that because if you're fans of...
Do they get to the desert in Nevada?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Well, because people know that because they remember the Moon Man from the MTV Movie Awards. That's how everybody knows that, right?
That's certainly how Violetta knows it, yeah.
But there's a lot of reminders, too. As we know, again, it's like, you know, there were men who sacrificed their lives, more than a few. In the course of getting to the moon, and Neil Armstrong himself flirted with death a couple of times.
There's an untold story. You know, people always the most famous situation was the guys on the ground in the capsule training, and then there was the oxygen fire,
right?
In which Gus Grissom,
yes,
and Chaffee and White, all three of them perished instantly in this in this gory, horrific way. But that was not in space. But there was another accident during the Apollo program that was not discussed very much, which was a plane crash.
Right,
in which two of the two astronauts were lost on their way to St. Louis, mm-hmm. to go to the, I guess it was at that point, it was the McDonnell Douglas plant in St. Louis that they were going to, a McDonnell Aviation plant. And they were, there was in a fog bank, and they were flying in on their T-38, their NASA. They look like little fighter jets or trainer jets. And they crashed on approach. And it's interesting because it was determined to be pilot error, and NASA essentially whitewashed that. You never hear that discussed in, you know, the deaths during the space program and stuff like that, because these guys were, and it was such a competitive era of you know, trying to also create these guys as supermen who were going off and doing this, and they didn't want they didn't want to let any sense of weakness or incapability or ineptitude play into the narrative in any way here. And there were, and this movie highlights it, there were a lot of things that were, this was by the seat of their pants, man.
Really was. At one point, the character that Claire Foy plays, Janet Armstrong, Neil Armstrong's wife, and they talk about how they got in control. She says, "You're just boys playing with balsa wood at the end of the day. You don't know what you're really doing." Of course, they did, and but they were also doing a lot of seat of the pants kind of stuff and a lot of adjustments. And as Ro mentioned, I think, you know, we didn't know how much the human element really played into almost every second there. Yeah. They weren't just strapping in and taking a ride.
Right. You know, right.
That's not what it was.
Hey, is this, what does this thing do? All right, hold on. Don't anybody move. Judy, what's coming up at the top of the hour?
Governor Rauner praising a great role model on this Columbus Day.
Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here, 720 WGN. Richard Roper is in for Anna today. And earlier, we sat down with Ryan Gosling and Damien Chazelle about the movie First Man, which is the story of Neil Armstrong. And it's really interesting because Neil Armstrong, the most famous astronaut of all times and maybe the most significant achievement by a human being ever, right? Mm. To stand on another world for a Homo sapien, that means a human being, by the way. Don't take that personally. To step foot on another world makes him the most, I would say probably the most significant, right? Yes, no?
Well, you know, if you say no, then what's the argument then? Like, who do you got? Who are you coming with, you know?
Right, exactly.
The first guy to score 30 points in an NBA game? No.
Yeah, no. I mean,
there's a lot of firsts that are impressive, but, you know, and obviously, too, in the course of history, only 12 human beings ever set foot on the moon, and I want to say maybe 5 or 6 are still with us now.
It's also pretty fascinating. I think that that it is not, you know, we're out of that business. And the Americans are the only ones who ever did that. You know, and the American fleet is the only fleet that ever got there and successfully landed humans on the moon. There are other craft on the moon from other countries, but there's not a whole lot of, you know, no other humans, no other citizens of any other nation have ever done it. And there's, and really, people haven't figured out how to make this a going concern. Now, interestingly enough, you know, President Trump says he wants to go back.
Space Force.
Yep. Start again. And that's because it was a good political move back in the 60s, and it was a great industrial move in the 1960s. But the world has changed a little bit along these lines, but we'll see what happens there. But anyway, so they have this movie. It's called First Man. We played the first half of the interview that we did with Ryan Gosling and Damien Chazelle, who's the director. Damien Chazelle. These are the two guys who did La La Land.
Right.
And did First Man. Which is, you cannot imagine two different movies here. Because this is very, if you love the right stuff and you loved Apollo 13, you are going to love this movie.
You think of that famous scene is at the Griffith Space Observatory in L.A. There's a famous dance scene in La La Land. Mm-hmm. Maybe Ryan was thinking, do they know what we're doing next?
Right. I mean, who knew, right? Who could imagine that you would make
space reference.
Yeah, that you'd make this. And this is going to get a ton of Oscar nominations. Yes. You gave it 4 stars.
Yes, sir.
And coming off of La La Land, I asked Ryan Gosling, well, how did you come up with this?
We met about First Man, and then but Damien had a musical to make first. And so we ended up talking more about Gene Kelly than Neil Armstrong in that first meeting. But, you know, it was... God, we're so lucky.
Were you on that movie at that point, or no? Were you on La La Land at that point?
No.
Was that the meeting that got him on La La Land, Damien?
Yeah, I mean, neither movie was a reality at that point. I mean, I didn't have a script for First Man, and La La Land, I had a script, but no one was making it. You know, it was just sort of languishing, and so it was
on that blacklist, right? Wasn't it on that list of scripts that
No, it didn't even make. You mean the sort of like the
scripts that hadn't been made? There were these great scripts.
Yeah, no, it didn't even make that. So it was Whiplash was on that. Yeah. I remember once, but no, La La Land was like literally, it was like the poor orphan.
Apparently, he wants to be a one-hit wonder off of Whiplash.
We'll do this next.
It happens, kid. You know.
No, but even though they were very different films and they weren't a reality, it was like the way that Damien described them was. You know, they were both stories that lended themselves to the big screen, and they were both stories that you would want to see in a theater and experience with other people, even though that they were wildly different. And I felt even in that meeting, even though there wasn't a script for First Man, just the way that he described that first X-15 sequence, I just realized just how immersive his films, you know, could be, and how just how wildly ambitious he was, but that he had the talent to back it up.
And the correct me if I'm wrong, Damien, but you shot the finale in 70mm, the landing sequences sequence itself.
The moonwalk itself, we shot an IMAX film, and which was itself kind of an amazing experience and opportunity to shoot. We shot it on a giant rock quarry out at night, lit by sort of a giant light off in the distance, simulating the sun.
Wow!
And so that was
fire.
The light caught fire twice.
Oh, geez. Our cinematographer built this light. It was the most powerful movie light I think ever made.
Wow.
And then
there's a reason they don't make them that powerful, because they catch fire.
There is the one chance you'll catch on fire. Other than that, let's roll.
But luckily, really awful to lose a guy making the landing as opposed to at the landing.
Good.
Luckily, he made a backup, so we were able to keep shooting. But
we were able to keep shooting, and then it started snowing. So we also have great outtake footage of Neil and Buzz Aldrin coming down the ladder in the snow before we stopped.
Houston, we did not prepare for this. You're not going to believe this.
I left a footprint. It's a snowy footprint. But it's a footprint. Are we good here?
It's a wonderful life, Neil. It's a wonderful life.
Yep. It's a real winter wonderland.
Oh, my goodness.
During that week.
Well, what's next for you two? I would like to... I don't know. I'm sure you guys have agents and everything. But if you don't, I'd be more than happy to put the deal together if you guys want to work together on something. Yeah.
You got any ideas?
Could write it on a napkin.
Yeah, right. I have a cocktail napkin right now. I've got an idea for. Can I ask, in this moment where America's kind of looking at itself and saying, who are we and what are we, you know, what are we all about? And you go back to NASA, right? And NASA is one of those things that I think everybody can agree on. And landing on the moon and space exploration has always been sort of a hallmark brand for the United States. What do you want this movie, what do you want The First Man to say to the United States?
Well, you know, actually, I think what's so fascinating about this period in NASA is that it wasn't this foregone conclusion. In fact, that you know, certainly we all know of the 60s as a very sort of divided time, but also that even opinions about space exploration at that time were very divided. And you know, the sort of argument about the pros and the cons, and an argument that you can understand when you look at something like the moon mission for what it really was. It was this outlandish idea, you know? It was right at the start of the 60s. We don't have the technology yet to do it, but we're going to say, yeah, we're going to put people on the moon by the end of the decade. It's insane. And actually, I think we take for granted how insane we take for granted the whole thing because we live in the aftermath of success.
It being a success, we take for granted.
Exactly. And I just find it astonishing. And I hope audiences take away from the movie just, you know, to look at, to be reminded of that. This was ordinary human beings. This was a group of human beings, not superheroes, getting together to do something utterly extraordinary, utterly unprecedented, not knowing if it would work. In fact, there was a lot of evidence it wouldn't work, you know, and walking this road filled with failure and loss and even tragedy to finally culminate in the success story that we all now can kind of revel in. I think it's just an insanely inspiring, moving, relevant testament to heroism and what humans are capable of.
And that's what I think is the key to the domestic scenes, because we see this. We see
that this is an American family. There's a wife and a mother trying to hold the family together.
Yeah.
There's a moment where Neil has to tell his sons he's probably going to go to the moon, and of course his sons, well, does that mean you're going to miss the swim meet that I've got coming up? Which which reminds us that these were not, as Roe has been saying, these were not superheroes. These were very flawed, very brave, and sometimes almost crazy men. To take this on, and a lot of the times their wives were saying that, like, I didn't sign up for this much. And Ryan, maybe you can talk a little bit about playing with Claire Foy and against her and opposite her and with her, and what that brought to the film.
Well, it's sort of half of my performance is Claire's hard work, because she makes Neil somebody that you can access him emotionally because her performance is so powerful, and she's so strong on screen. She's such a great representation, I think, of Janet, who I had the opportunity to meet before she passed away. I always knew what she was doing was so obviously so helpful to me, and I knew to the film. But it's been great to do. To spend time now with the Armstrong sons, because they really can't. And it's really beautiful the way that they regard her and her performance of their mother. Right. They really feel like it's a real testament to who she was.
That's fantastic.
That's got to be amazing. That's a lot of pressure on Claire Foy, right? I mean, that's just, it's crazy to think about that, where they're like, well, mom would have done it this way, right? But it is, she does, it's an amazing performance.
And you essentially built the house, right? Is that correct, Amy? The Armstrong home, like a replica of their home at the time?
Yeah. But both homes that they live in, we sort of did kind of full-scale replicas of. But, all that was because, we were able to go to the existing house, but also that, Rick Armstrong, Neil son drew us a floor map. He's kind of like his dad, very just smart engineering mind.
Yeah.
And he was able to draw it out, and it was an example of many of just the sons, the family being so helpful to us. That's great. We couldn't have gotten it right at this level, to this degree, if it weren't for them. And the fact that they, say what they say about Claire's performance, and I might add Ryan's performance.
That's a little something there too.
That they feel they see their mom and dad honestly reflected on screen. That, I think, for us is the biggest relief and the biggest joy.
Yeah,
one of my favorite stories is when we rebuilt their childhood home, and it for us it felt like some kind of time, because we had seen it in these Life magazine photographs. Yeah. It felt like time travel, and they came to set, and we were all watching them to see what they would say. What a surreal experience to have happen. And and Rick said, it's good. Do you want me to tell you what's wrong?
Right to it. Okay.
Oh, man. All right. First Man opens.
Son of Neil.
Opens Friday. Run. Take a spaceship. Whatever you do. Get to this movie to see it, because it is, one of the greatest space movie. If you're into space, this does it in a way that I think this is so true to what those really, really brave people did. And what they experienced, and how scary that whole thing really was. And it takes you into it in a real way, in a science-y scary way, not a monster scary way. But if you want to be a monster scary way, then go ahead and do it that way.
People should know this too. Yeah. It's also entertaining as hell. You got to know that going into this. This is not a history. It is a history lesson, but it's beautiful, and it's lovely, lovely, lovely performances throughout, and can be really funny at times as well. So it's the complete package as a film. People should know that.
First Man, Ryan Gosling. Thank you very much, Damien Chazelle.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for everything you've done. I appreciate it, sir.
Thank you, guys.
Right. Thanks, guys.
All right, that's there they are, Ryan Gosling and Damien Chazelle. We will put that up for podcast. Already up? Already up, because that was part two. You can hear the part one. You can have the whole thing sent to your friends. Enjoy it. And Ryan Gosling, I can honestly say, Judy will confirm this, is as dreamy as anybody could imagine him to be.
Oh, my gosh. He was so dreamy. And when he walked by, I said, "Hi, Ryan." Like, I sang it like I was in high school.
Yeah.
Because he was really pretty.
Yeah. Kevin and I said, "Dave, you want to throw a ball around?" Yeah, what do you got?
What's up, dude? I can't wait to see this movie.
Oh, it's fantastic. It really is. I don't know. You know, when you say fantastic, it's almost too Hollywood of a way to say it. It's a great ride. It's 2 hours. It takes you on the ride. And the sound, I mentioned this earlier when I was talking to them, the sound alone, because it sounds like the stuff is always falling apart when you're, you know, like when you're driving in your car and you hear something weird, you're like, oh my God, what's going on? That's like the entire way to the moon. It's like, because you hear these things, and I know they're used to it, and they're trained to be used to it, but it's just, it's outrageously wild. Outrageously wild how good it is, and yet it's also a really thoughtful film. Two of the best movies I have seen in years are out right now, and you should go see them both. And I know A Star Is Born, I know that's like, I'm gonna go see that. Wait, if you are a Pearl Jam fan, if you're a Pearl guy, you're a Pearl Jam fan, you're gonna love A Star Is Born, because he's basing his performance on Eddie Vedder. And you see it, and you're like, oh my God, that's Eddie Vedder.
Does he hang out at Wrigley the whole time?
That's kind of a little bit. You'll see how he has to do what he has to do. It's kind of cool. I mean, it's not obvious.
I got a long list of movies to get to right now. There's some good stuff.
It's really good, and Lady Gaga is amazing in it. And I know that's, I mean, you know, as a guy, you're not supposed to say it. God, Lady Gaga was amazing.
Especially coming from you.
She stole my heart.
I know. I mean, you don't want.
Did
you know,
she make you cry?
Like, if you're like with a bunch of guys at, B-dubs or something like that, and you're on a Sunday, like in the middle of the games yesterday, I didn't run and scream, you're not gonna believe Lady Gaga and A Star Is Born.
It's so funny, because Saturday night, I ran into my buddy's dad, stopped by for a minute, and he's like, I was just had to go see A Star Is Born, and then, you know, he acts like he hated it, and as kind of as the night went on, he's like, that movie was awesome.
I know, right? It really is. It's great. The music is great. They take you backstage at what it really feels like backstage at a concert, especially when the star is throwing up in a bucket. I mean, it's really, really, really good. Really, really, really good. And definitely worth saying. And this is really, 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 I mean, these are both 4-star films. And they're both going to be Oscar contenders. And the thing is, I thought for a second that I don't know between those two what I'd want for Best Picture. And then there's a couple other movies coming out too. That Vice movie, I don't know that'll be a Best Picture winner. But I think you see Christian Bale becomes Dick Cheney, and you're like, how could Christian Bale play Dick Cheney?
He looks just like him.
No. He looks, oh my God.
He looks like.
Yeah, I know, yeah. But when he's in character, he looks identical.
Yeah.
And it's almost like you would not know the difference between the two. So he wins Best Picture. He wins Best Actor. Like, they should just mail the Oscar to him now. I've only seen the trailer for it. Just send the Oscar. Save the time. Save the expense. Just the postage. That's all you need.
I hope he accepts in character. When he walks up to the... Is that Dick Cheney?
Because that is... Although Ryan Gosling will be up. Because his performance...
Ryan Gosling won me over because I know The Notebook. Then Drive came out.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this guy's a badass. He can do it all.
Yes. And then La La Land. I mean, he was so great in La La Land. Again, this is not something I said Sunday while watching the NFL. Hey, guys, if you loved La La Land.
Can we put La La on at halftime?
Yes. It would be really great because I know we've got that right now. But I'm going to tell you, A Star Is Born. Let's not watch the originals. All right.
Embrace your softer side, okay, Ro?
Okay.
I think he is right now. This is a big moment.
I know. It is a big moment.
He's trying not to.
I know, but I gotta, I gotta.
Yeah, all right, we know you're
Monday Night Football night. Man,
yeah, that's enough. That's enough stuff. Let's go eat some beef jerky and throw the pigskin around and watch Monday Night Football. Enough of this lovey-dovey stuff.
All right, Judy, what do you have coming up at the bottom of the hour?
Well, Mayor Emanuel says President Trump is pushing failed policies in Chicago.
This right here on 720 WGN.
Do I already look? Am I already better looking by sitting in the chair Ryan Gosling sat in and putting the headphones on that he wore earlier? And is it not doing anything for me?
I earlier just took a gigantic whiff of those headphones. Well, because Judy did it first, and I thought, why is Judy smelling his headphones?
Did you guys tell Ryan? Oh, the girls always act like this around here.
Yeah.
It's not just because you're here.
Yeah. And then
it happens to me all the time,
so
bro.
So then I picked him up smelling, is there something wrong with these headphones? It was weird. It's weird.
I just feel different sitting here now that I know Ryan Gosling was sitting in the same chair and talking to this microphone.
Yeah. I'm selling that chair, by the way. For I'm letting ladies have that chair for $10. You get 10 minutes with
I'll
the
give
chair.
You 15.
It's 10 minutes in heaven with the chair. Whatever you want to do with the chair.
10 minutes.
Did you see the gaggle of girls in the hallway? It was pretty hilarious.
Yeah, everyone has happened to be wandering around looking for coffee or a cup of water just around the time Gosling happened to be walking through our hallways.
That was interesting because the Gosling, you know, he had a lot of detail around him for, you know, because they had like publicists and stuff in the film. This is such a big deal, this movie, because it's such a change from what La La Land was, and it's the same team of people doing it. And it's like, I think they're a little, they want to explain what it is. You know, this is not La La Land.
Plug it properly.
Yeah, it's a different kind of a movie because it's about space.
And a true story.
Yeah, and what, La La Land wasn't a true story?
What? Spoiler alert.
Yeah. So, anyway, the point is that it's, First Man, which is about the, Apollo 11 landing on the moon, and it's great. It's the story of Neil Armstrong, and it is fantastic. And Claire Foy, who people love from the Crown, right? She used to be the queen. She's not the queen anymore. They're replacing her now because she's gotten too young to play the queen. That's the first time in Hollywood ever where an actress got fired for being too young. So this is it's great.
Great interview.
Yeah, it's great. And people can listen to the interview with Damien Chazelle and that Ryan kid. What is his name?
Gosling, I believe.
Ryan Gosling. Yes. It's on the WGNradio.com on the podcast. All right. So I've been talking about La La Land,
right.
And I've been talking about Star Is Born.
Guy stuff. Football. Football.
Yeah. Are you ready for some football? All right, Hogue's with us. Were you at House Hall today, Hogue?
I was.
Yeah, okay, good.
We got the beef jerky. Yeah, we've been kind of fluffing this stuff up with Gosling walking through the halls here, Hogue. So now we've got like beef jerky, a football out. We're like, let's get Hogue on to talk some football.
Yeah, you know what we're going to do? We're going to get the chair. Get Nagy's chair. We'll put that on the 10 minutes of heaven, too.
Gosling's chair got nothing on Nagy.
Kev, I want you to know that you already look better to me.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And I can't even see you right now.
Right. Thank you, Adam. I appreciate that.
All right. Okay, so the Bears, may I just say this? Because this is unfreaking believable. The Bears are there at the very top of the heap in the NFC North because you had the Green Bay Packers take a pooper yesterday. Right, which is great. There is nothing better than watching the Green Bay Packers all look at each other like, what just happened? That is the best feeling ever.
It really is. It was an epic meltdown, too. I mean, first of all, they couldn't get the ball in the end zone early, and then their kicker missed every kick. Until the finally at the end, he finally made one kick, but missed four field goals, I believe, and one extra point in a single game. And it was just I came into the season, I didn't think the Packers were going to be a playoff team to begin with, and I predicted Mike McCarthy will get fired at the end of the year, and right now I feel pretty okay about that prediction.
Wow. Well, Bears 3-1, Packers 2-2-1, same for Minnesota, and the Lions are 2-3 in last place. You know, one of the things I caught my eye today, Adam, was, and I know it's a small sample size, but if you look around the league, this is a pretty impressive number. Their point differential total. And I know this can be skewed a little bit because there could be garbage time things, a lot of things that factor in, but it's plus 46. Green Bay is the next closest in the division at plus +1.
Yeah.
The highest in the NFC is plus +75, the Rams. Like I said, I realize it's a small sample size, but it's a little bit telling here. The Bears are starting to look like if they don't make the playoffs at this point, at least from what we've seen, I think a lot of us would be let down.
Isn't the average gain some crazy number two? They've got. I mean, I know that
that's like OB's like own algorithm. That
he's got
that.
He's got the, like 8.5 yards or whatever it is. And you're like, is it really? I don't know. But whatever it is, it is. I guess the average gain by pass is 8.5 yard. That's pretty great.
I'd love to hear OB explain his algorithm.
Yeah, it's okay.
Really fun.
You ask him.
It sounds awesome. Look, I that is skewed a little bit because look, they beat the Bucks by 38 points right there. But you know, I think as we're starting to see this start to shape out, the Bears clearly have the best defense in the division. Where their quarterback ranks, all right, probably right now he's probably still fourth in the division, but that could change here as we get a little bit more of a bigger sample size. And certainly if he follows up that performance against the Buccaneers, against the Dolphins on Sunday.
And he's going to need it. The Dolphins, I was watching them a little bit yesterday, and I'm trying to do a little bit of
scouting.
Take a look.
Scouting.
I had my notes out. Take a look. You know, the Dolphins have some things. They have some weapons, and I just hope that after, you know, a week off, the momentum doesn't really carry. Adam, would you agree with that? You know, to the second week, and is it a little bit of a zero set when you come back off your bye?
Yeah, I think so. I don't. Even today, it was kind of weird talking to the players about a game that happened over a week ago. So the page has been turned. But I will say, you know, the Dolphins blew a 17-0 lead yesterday, and the game completely changed when their left tackle Laremy Tunsil came out, and he might have a concussion. We're certainly going to be watching it this week if he's on the injury report or not, because the idea that the Dolphins are going to be without him against Khalil Mack and this Bears defense could be enormous. So it's probably one of the bigger stories of the entire week, and the way they just blew a 17-0 lead after he got hurt yesterday, I thought.
God, I haven't heard that name since draft night a few years ago, right?
You're right, with the mask.
Gas mask. Remember that? The picture surfaced on draft night?
Yes.
It's got like a gas mask bong type thing.
Hey,
I always say, draft the weed guy. Always draft the weed guy. He fell like 12 spots. He should have been like the third overall pick. He fell to like 16 or something. And now the Dolphins have a cornerstone left tackle.
How about that?
Yeah.
Right? But, well, they don't now, though. I mean, that's the problem. How long is he going to be out for?
We don't know. I mean, he was in the concussion protocol. So the fact it's Monday, we won't even know until Wednesday if he's on the injury report or not. He could be fine. Man, they need him, though. Khalil Mack going up against this. The Dolphins' offensive line already wasn't good. I don't know if you guys remember Ted Larson. He was on the Bears a couple years ago.
Yeah.
That might have even been last year. I'm forgetting my years now. And he starts for them on their offensive line. This is a matchup the Bears can win just because of their pass rush going up against the Dolphins' O-line. It should be winnable.
Feels like a winnable game.
Hope so. But they're going down to Miami. There's always BS in Miami. I'm sorry. There's just no two ways around it.
Adam, he's worried about the off-field stuff. You know,
that it happens down there. It's one of the things, and you know, that's Miami always has a home field advantage because of that. It's exactly for the exact same reason that the Las Vegas Golden Knights had a home ice advantage, right? Because teams get there.
The Vegas flu.
Yeah. And Miami's got the same kind of deal. Hey, let's go to a club tonight, blah, 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 blah. And it's just, you know, it's like a, it's, I,
I'm, a lot of temptations
this,
out there.
This team, the one thing we're not sure about is how they, because it's all new and they're not really a single cohesive unit yet. You saw the beginning of it last week. The cohesive unit is on the field and off the field. These guys have experiences in both realms, and they have to make those things kind of come together as one idea. It's tough.
Yeah, I think on the defensive side, we're starting to see that identity, which is kind of what you're getting at there. Offensively, it's still, you know, a work in progress. I think even some of these players are trying to figure it out. You know, we're talking to Jordan Howard today, who barely got the ball last week against the Bucs, and he's supposed to be, you know, the bell cow running back on this team, and I think he's got to get used to the idea that one week it might be him, one week it might be Tariq Cohen, and that's the kind of chemistry that they have to figure out. I did like what Allen Robinson said today about, you know, just if there was one locker room that would be focused coming out of a bye week, he said it would be this one.
I hope so.
And that's a veteran. This is only his second team, but he's been around a little bit, and he certainly feels good
about. And he's the second Allen Robinson, as it turns out, according to the back of his jersey.
That's right.
He is Allen Robinson,
you know,
too.
I'm glad you brought up Jordan Howard, because I feel like there's this growing, like, little undercurrent buzz here in town where people are like, what's going on with Jordan Howard? Why isn't he getting the ball more? Does he fit in the offense? Is Matt Nagy not like Jordan Howard? And I'm just sort of like, well, calm down a little bit. It's only been 4 weeks. Last year, we were screaming at the TV to give the hot hand Tariq Cohen the ball more, and that's what they did last week. He was the hot hand. They played it. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a week within, you know, next week or 2 weeks where it's the Jordan Howard game where they hand it to him 30 times and he takes over.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, yeah, pound the rock.
And I, you know, Tariq Cohen was quick to point out today.
Did I mention that I really liked A Star Is Born? Pound the Rock!
Tony Rock.
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, they seem fine with it, right? Tariq and Jordan Howard, sort of the way the ball's been distributed between those two.
Well, Cohen had a good point today. He's like, well, pretty much every other game, Jordan Howard's gotten the ball a lot more than me.
Right.
You know, it was one game. Right. And Matt Nagy identified a clear weakness that the Bucs weren't prepared for, and they took advantage of it. So, sure, you know, if the Dolphins are going to be more concerned about Cohen out there as a receiver or coming out of the backfield, then maybe
it's the whole point of this.
Right,
it's the whole point
deception
of this exercise.
With all these different weapons,
we no idea what the hell's going on. And I know that trickification is really it's the new NFL, right? This is the whole thing. You saw a ton of it yesterday, right? The teams doing all kinds of crazy things and guys running. And, you know, they have changed the motion concept completely.
A lot of moving parts these days with modern NFL offenses,
right.
I would say.
But I also feel stupid talking about this sometimes because it's like, this is football. Like, you're trying to create mismatches. This is what every coach has been doing since the game started. But, like, the Bears had an offense the last 3 years where they just didn't really try to do that.
Right.
So it's like we're getting back to football 101 here as we try to explain this stuff, but it's right. worth talking about.
Yeah. It really does show you the immense amount of it's malpractice by the Bears coaching staff over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
They did not care. They had lost their way. They didn't. I mean, they everybody had the same Jay Cutler-esque attitude. Sort of, you know, cigarette in the mouth, like, all right, we got to show up.
Hey, well, they face a former Bears coach Sunday in Adam Gase. He was the one. Remember, nobody wanted him to leave. A lot of Bears fans wanted him to just be promoted from offense coordinator to head coach.
Remember, he had his best year under him.
Right.
Right. And then Cutler went over to play for him last year. Yeah. He was disinterested then, too.
Yeah, it didn't go as well down there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, I guess what we got to look at here, though, is, and Gase is going to want to prove something. I think there's a potential for trap here. I would, let's see how they practice this week. Let's see what else happens. Let's see if this lineman comes back. I mean, there's a lot that goes on here. But you cannot, the NFL is a gaga. Again, did I tell you how much I loved A Star Is Born? The NFL is a gaga about Khalil Mack.
Mm-hmm.
It's so interesting. He's in every promo. You never
jerseys are everywhere.
You never saw when he was with the Raiders. You didn't see Khalil Mack and the Raiders taking on.
Well, Thursday Night Football, they actually built in time to the broadcast to do.
I was going
to
bring that up.
They did a whole package on the Bears, the start to the season, and Khalil Mack in the middle of a Thursday night game that the Bears had nothing to do with.
Right. It was the Colts playing the Patriots. Right. It's a blowout. They're trying to fill garbage time at the end of the game, and they're
like, "Roll the Mack package.
How about those Bears and Khalil Mack? Like, when's the last time we've seen that?"
Right. Well, I think they also want to make a point about it, maybe the most dunderheaded roster move in the history of football.
Right, yeah.
By the Oakland Raiders going off to, you know, they're going to Las Vegas and they're just deconstructing. It was like, it was almost like, you know, you're at the airport and your bag is overweight and you're trying to throw stuff out, right? And that's kind of what, it's almost what it felt like. Oh, this is really heavy, but we need it! Why did you throw out Khalil Mack? You should. Like, the husband and wife are screaming. You can't throw out Khalil Mack!
Right.
All right. Adam, thank you very much. We'll talk to you.
All right.
There he is, Adam Hoge. Let's talk right now with Andrea Darlis. What's coming up in the newsroom at the top of the hour?
Well, coming up, we're going to have more on what President Trump said about Chicago today and Mayor Emanuel's reaction. That coming up at 7 o'clock.